The issue of the day, of course, is that there has been treated wastewater go into the harbour during the incoming tide, spotted by
Matt Stockton, yeah, which was great.
And other residents.
Yeah, and other residents. And
kite surfers saw it very easily because they were right on top of it.
Because the if you're unaware of where the outfall pipe is for the waste treated wastewater, it's actually just in front of where the green toilets are on Rere Kereopa Memorial Drive. So you'll often see on the usually outgoing tide a bubbling of water. Some people call it the Taniwha out there, and of course it came to my attention through social media, and it was one of the community board members who actually asked a question, have we heard anything about the discharge? And so that was spoke to Dennis, who's the chair of the community board, and then I contacted staff who got onto it immediately to check that, and it was a discharge onto the incoming tide, which was incredibly disappointing. And it was
So can we just say it can happen under the terms of the rules of consent when there's overflow in the system?
When there's overflow. So there is wriggle room in the resource consent to discharge on an incoming tide. And we saw that when we had the heavy rain earlier on in the year, where the treatment ponds were getting to a really high level with the infiltration of water and that.
So that was my first thought. I was like, it hasn't rained that much.
No, exactly. And that's exactly what Dennis said when I spoke to him on the phone. So what had happened was that there was a programming error in the treatment plant operating system. And so this unfortunately resulted in the tide times being inverted, which meant that the discharge was on the incoming tide rather than the outgoing tide.
So basically a bug in the system, in the computer system.
Because the system believed it was operating as expected, no alarms were triggered to highlight the issue.
I was actually a little surprised that the alarm system is all internal like that.
Yeah.
Because it's not independent.
Yep. And so that when we were alerted to the fact that there was a discharge and it was confirmed, the team shut the plant down, but that manual intervention didn't work and another discharge went out into the incoming tide. Mm. And so that's been corrected, but unfortunately, that's had an impact on us with the treated wastewater being discharged.
So how do you feel about this?
I feel gutted, to be honest. I feel really disappointed. And there were, what I can see, a number of things that need to be addressed around the system and the alarms not going off. So I need to understand what's the process if there is something like that that is alerted by the community. And the alarms don't work. We find out that it is happening, so we shut it down. But my question is, did anyone actually visit the plant to double check what was happening? So there are a number of things falling from that I've already asked the questions. And then obviously with the person who put the social media post in, I've been in contact with them, not being able to get through our 0800 number. So I've followed up with that as well. And sometimes that does happen if there's a lot of calls coming in that you might be on hold. But I can only speculate, but I've put it out there to get that checked. And if there are any issues, how do we solve that, so it doesn't happen again? And what I really encourage the community to do, if there are things like this that you're worried about, you can't get through, I'm always available, myself and Dennis from the community board.
In fact, I'm sure any community board member would take a call on this topic.
So feel free to either message me by Facebook, social media, or alternatively, my mobile phone, my details are easily available. So you can access, getting my mobile number, which is 0211-798-256. You know, when issues like this happen, I'd like to think that I'd be able to get some eyes on it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, well, because I was thinking, when I first saw it, I was like, when was that? If it happened after 5, then there will be... How long is the 0800 number staffed for?
It's actually all the time. So, oh, is it? Yeah, okay. There's a switchboard number. So you should be able to get through to a someone. So
I feel like personally it would be faster ringing you anyway, just because...
In situations like that.
I know you'll act urgently on it because you care about it and you're a counsellor, and that carries some sway with staff when the counsellors call.
And because you've got contact with staff as well.
Yeah, you know, and you know who to ring, and you don't have to go through all the stages that other staff would.
You know, it's only in emergencies that, you know, that I would do that rather than using the service request system or the 0800 number. You know, and so this is a high priority action. So I just really encourage people, don't be shy to reach out.
Yeah, because there's a lot of
flurry. So we've certainly asked questions, And we've certainly asked questions, myself and Dennis, and there's some things that we're awaiting answers on.
Yeah, okay. Do you want to talk about the Merrill Awards?
Yeah, they were great. The Merrill Awards were really well attended, actually. There were a number of recipients. I think 32
across the district, yeah. Only 3 from Whangaroa.
Yep. So how that process worked is that the community board chose a recipient. I chose a recipient. Then Tilly Turner, our Māori board councillor, she chose a recipient. But we were all in agreement with who we were going to choose, which was great. So it was awesome to see Angeline Greensill, Margaret Dillon, and Kevin Holmes attending, plus all of the other recipients. And I think the oldest recipient of the night was 96.
Was he one of the ones in the wheelchair? There were a couple of people in wheelchairs in the photo. Yeah.
So there were lots of people who have done significant amounts of volunteer work within their own community. So it was really neat to come together to celebrate those. And obviously seeing our Raglan people receiving the awards was really gratifying. So that it was a lovely evening, actually.
So this is a new initiative by the new mayor, is it?
The Merrill Awards is something that we've had in the past. But in my first term, I think we had 2 iterations of the Merrill Awards. But of course, in my second term, there was a pandemic. So for much of that time, we were operating remotely as opposed to, having big gatherings. So it's nice to see it reignited in council.
So this will happen again next year is what we would expect?
That's the intent of it, is to happen next year.
Okay. The civil defence stuff, we're looking forward to like a stakeholder meeting or something? Is that what we call it?
We are looking forward to the stakeholder meeting, and I know I've said this last time that we're waiting. So we're putting the final touches, as I said before, on our community response plan. Myself, Dennis and Ross, we do need to meet with Scott Build, who's our emergency management / community response person who's resourcing and helping the communities to create their response plans, and then we do training and, of course, the resourcing of those who will be in the emergency management should anything happen in a local context. So I'm really excited about that, so watch the space because it's not far away.
Okay, all right. I just popped into my head about the school pool. You're still on the Board of Trustees at the school?
Yes, so if we need some...
Looking for... is a fundraiser happening at the moment or something like that?
There is a proposed fundraiser because we need to get some money to resurface the school pool so we can have it functioning hopefully next year. So if there's any benefactor out there that are listening, the school... and the Parent Teacher Association and the Board of Trustees would be really keen to hear from you, to work with anyone in the community who'd be keen to support that. Because remember, our school pool, we've got over 540 students, and when we have the school pool up and running, it is well utilised, in terms, particularly in Term 1, And previously, when we had the Raglan Swimming Club, the swimming club would utilise the pool in term four when the school wasn't using it as much. But it's something that has wide benefit to our school community and also to the wider community when we've had our lane swimming in the mornings and in the evenings, and also surf lifesaving would use it for training for the lifeguards and things like that. So, yeah, we're looking at revitalising the pool.
So there's been, I think in the last, well, actually, John Lawson tells me since forever, like in the 1920s, I think people were wanting a pool, like a centennial pool or something they were calling it then. And there was talk, I think was it in the blueprints or was it? No, it was a survey that the community board did quite a few years ago now.
It was, I think.
And it was voted in as quite a high priority for the community. And that's not, and that wouldn't be the school pool, that would be a different pool.
A different pool.
And now we hear that developers at Rangatahi are thinking of putting one in there, but we don't know much about it.
Yeah, the fitness centre.
Where does
pool.
All that? A fitness centre and pool.
Yeah, fitness centre and swimming pool. And I believe that, the community board will be meeting with those people this afternoon, actually, just to talk about what that might look like. And so it has been a desire of the community to have a community swimming pool. That looks like, that's up to the community to determine. And then if we look at, council, if the community wanted council to do that, then it will come at a significant cost. So there's all of those things to consider as well.
Yeah, and that was the significant cost was the thing that...
And then would it be a targeted rate for the community, which it would have to be a targeted rate for the community, as opposed to a general rate. A general rate is the rate that is taken from all of the ratepayers from across the district to service, for example, roading or...
There's also ongoing costs.
Yeah, there's ongoing costs, like maintenance, as well, which aren't insignificant.
And staffing, you'd have to have it staffed, wouldn't you?
You'd have to have it staffed, you'd have to have the maintenance, you'd have to...
In some ways, that's a bigger hurdle. That ongoing cost could be a bigger hurdle than actually getting the money together to build it.
Well, I have no idea what it would cost to build a swimming pool, to be honest.
A lot.
It would cost a lot. So
I'm also hearing... I know that there's talk about extra sports fields, and that's come from within council because of the growth of sport here. And I hear talk of people wanting to get a basketball building built.
But there's some passionate people.
Are all these people talking to each other? I wonder.
Yes. My understanding is that they are. I know that Dennis has spoken to the very keen people who are looking at, basketball courts. And so there's a real passion in the community to have some form of cohesive sports management, which would also include the fields. And where would that be? Would it be Wainui Reserve? So there's lots to think about and, the cost implications of that, of those initiatives and who would be responsible for them.
Because we've seen council recently purchase some land near Te Kōwhai for that kind of purpose.
Yeah.
And I imagine as our whangarau councillor, you'll be like, well, if you guys are getting one, what about my community?
But you see, that was something that we couldn't not get. So it's not only just thinking about whether it's for whangarau or Te Kōwhai. It's, when there's opportunities for land acquisition like that in areas where there's growth, you sort of have to make that consideration in that wider picture.
Yeah.
And so where do we have, the opportunities for us to... have land like that in a strategic area that's flat,
that's
not
more
prone
of a challenge
to flooding or those sorts of things. So it's hard for us. Yeah, it's hard to do a comparison. Well, they have it, why don't we? Because it's
more of the principle.
The principle of it here, absolutely, with looking at where we can go and develop more for our sports. And other activities as well. Where would that be in this community? So, yeah, Te Kōwhai was something that
lots of flat land around Te Kōwhai.
Yeah, it was an opportunity that we needed to take.
Yeah, oh, wrong mouse. I'm just checking out other things. While I'm talking, I'm dropping my paper. I'm kicking the councillor's foot. can we talk about erosion at Papahua? I had a very interesting discussion with Shaw Mead
yesterday.
And specifically on the inlet side, this between the boat ramp and the walk bridge, and his description of that area is a very modified by humans area because you've got walls on one side, you've got a little wall. I'm imagining things. You've got boat ramps. There's all sorts of human created stuff going on, and I did put to him that the regional council's comment is, "Oh, we always try planting first to hold back the dunes and to restore the dunes," but his comment was that it's such a modified area, and because of the change in the bridge that it took out what was effectively a groin 10 years ago, that if we want to maintain our infrastructure that we've got, a groin needs to go back, really. And I know there's been discussions with the campground. Ngāti Mahanga is very concerned.
And our staff as well.
Yeah.
When I say our staff, Waikato District Council staff, about what are the options there. And we did talk about, reinstating what was with the bridge. And I'd be very interested to listen to the interview and obviously talk with Shaw as well. In my first term as councillor, I actually met with Malibu Hamilton and Shaw Mead down at Papahua, actually, on the campground side, to talk about these very things. So we've raised that with our staff, and this work, because we haven't done any costings, isn't in the this tranche of the considerations for the long-term plan. And you would have heard me speak about the long-term plan before. The long-term plan is a 10-year planning mechanism. It's a bit like crystal balling about what's going to be happening, and we put in budgets for forecasted works. And in that 10 years, we also break it down to every 3 years where we have a revision, more or less, of the long-term plan. And so we're into the next part of the long-term plan of the next 3 years. So we haven't in there put any consideration to works that would happen at Papahua.
So when you say we, you mean council is drafting the document at the moment.
And council staff.
Yeah.
We haven't, because we're already through that process. So that will be something that we as a community will need to look at in terms of how will we fund works that need to be undertaken. So
he did say that, like, a concrete thing that went out to the post, the next column in the water, he didn't think that would be too expensive because it just is a lump of concrete. So it's not that complicated.
Yeah, but then you come into resource consenting, and that those sorts of activities that do require more than just council.
So that's always a slow process.
Yep, and so as you might be aware, we're doing some work on the Weneta walkway, which is between the jetty and the walk bridge, the upgrade of that part of the footpath, and the other parts of infrastructure, the lighting.
I actually was walking along the bit on the way round to where the little boat ramp is by the fire station, and that is much more. It's falling apart.
It is, and
yeah,
that's much more
quite alarming.
And that's much more complicated. That requires quite a lot of work. So initially the first part will be the high volume of traffic that goes from the walk bridge to the jetty. So we will be doing works on there. So asking the engineers who are working on there to have a look on the other side of the bridge at the possibilities, and maybe getting an idea of what that might look like and cost things.
I'm interested now, having spoken to Shaw about, because I know that the walkway we're talking
Shaw's
about.
And we've got Shaw's report that you actually sent through to me.
Right.
Called the Te Corpus, but so I need to get him to change the name.
That's how old the report is.
Yeah.
Just talking about, like, so that Weneta walkway, we're talking about widening it, putting a handrail on it. So at the moment it's a slopey kind of a wall, and would it therefore become like a vertical wall? And I think that would have, if that were to happen, based on my understanding of what Shaw's been saying, that would create more reflection across the other side and cause more erosion where the erosion's happening. This is my non-expert thought in the moment.
You would probably It'll be best to probably get Niall in to speak to this. He's our staffer that has oversight on this, or even Dennis, because, you know, Dennis is an engineer, and then you're talking to me, and I see the plans, the widening of the footpath, putting up the balustrade, the rail for safety and all the other bits, but I don't know anything about the impact that that would have on the refraction and the movement of sand and the water. So it would probably be quite good to...
Well, hope to talk to Dennis next week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he couldn't come in today, so we swapped weeks for you guys.
Yeah, so I think it would be best to speak to Dennis because he's more of the technical person. I look at it and go, okay, so we're having a footpath and the handrails and we're getting the lighting fixed as well, you know, but those other
So they've
details,
got they've got a design ready
have,
now.
Yeah,
okay.
They've got
are we going
ready.
To see that at some point? Usually we get to see it before it gets built.
Well, the plans have only, they're just looking at the costings at the moment.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I appreciate, yeah, because they might cost it and go, no, we can't do that.
And information, you know, the proposed plans, as time has gone on, has come to the community board. So you can go and look back in the community board minutes as well, because those have been shared with the community board. And obviously over time, given budget, you know, and looking at, they've been tweaking in the design as well. So I think it's been on the community board agendas, or with it's
I've got it here, but it's many pages long.
Yeah,
so I could sit here scrolling for ages and it would be a very boring interview. Oh, there's photos of excavation happening by
the
wharf.
Yeah,
yeah. But I actually want to go back to because we were talking about the sewage before, and there's a lot of comments on Facebook of people from people clearly unaware that for the last about 3 years, council's
been
working on a land based sewage treatment plan. So I was able to link people to a recent interview where you and I talked about it, but and I did put in a comment that there are a group of locals opposed to this plan, who, and I guess this is a NIMBY issue, not in my backyard issue. Have we got any progress about what's happening? This is my lead in to ask, any progress on the land-based sewage treatment?
There is. There's lots of work behind the scenes that's going on to into that consideration. And staff, the last week I went to, which was actually last Thursday, which was the Zoom one, because we have a monthly catch-up that's open to anyone in the community to attend. And I've said this many times on the radio, if you're interested in getting the information and even watching the Zoom meetings that we've had, they're all online. The information's there, so you can actually go and see what has been undertaken and what's been proposed. Part of the challenges with the land-based treatment is obviously the type of land. You can't just put it onto any soil in any paddock on any farm. It has to be quite specific.
Yeah.
And we have a high clay area density around Raglan.
And we know what that's like when water just sits on it.
Yeah, so there's been lots of work in looking at where are suitable sites. And one, obviously, is near Mangatawhiri Road. And so that's not council land. So that adds to the complexity when we're working with prospective land owners on negotiating the use of that land, whether it's a lease or buying or whatever it might be. So that's part of the negotiation and the considerations, and that takes time. And they did mention on Thursday about reinvestigating or re-engaging in options for maybe Wainui Reserve. But that, again, is going back to when that was first initiated. And so that's part of the reconsidering that as part of an option as well.
Because there's too much objection from...
No, it's actually negotiating the use of the land.
Okay.
So that's the intricacy.
Is there money changing? There must be money changing hands or something. Like.
Well, it depends on what the relationship will be, if it will be buying the land outright or if it will be a lease. So those details are still they're still being worked out. So that's part of the process as well, because like I said, we don't necessarily, council doesn't necessarily have the right land to access. So finding that land, then negotiating with whoever that landowner might be, if we find appropriate place. And a lot of work has been done on the topography, you know, the lay of the land, what sort of system could be used. And I really encourage people, if you are truly interested in finding out what we've been doing, you can call me, or you can go onto the Raglan Wastewater Treatment page on our website, on the Waikato District Council website, and all of the information is there.
We have linked to that page in the past, yeah, on the article, so, but most people don't read the article, they see the Facebook headline.
I know, then looking for answers, there are answers that are there, and all of the information is there. All of the Zoom hui that we've had that are online have been recorded and they're there. All of the proposed options are there. All of the technical information is there.
So there were some reports planned to investigate. I know there had to be some investigation about if it does go at that site on Mangatawhiri, then the pipes have to come from the wastewater treatment plant, because it's not raw sewage, it's treated water, and they've got to get there, and they usually go where roads are. So where would the roads go? So there was a report on that, and then there was going to be one on the soil as well.
There is. All of the reports are on that page. So if you go in there, you'll find all of the information. And it's actually quite fascinating because all of the technical details there, and also what they showed Richard and the team showed on Thursday was the where those proposed lines for the treatment, the treated water to go to that area. So it's not insignificant to try and pump that treated wastewater uphill to then be dispersed on land.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and then there's the consideration because my understanding is that it wouldn't be able to be done all year round, because obviously with wet weather events that soaks the land. So when you are dispersing treated wastewater onto land, there has to be the capacity for the land to take it. And if it's too wet already, you know, that lessens the capacity and the options of that. So do you have still holding? So there's all sorts of considerations.
The options are like holding tank, put it back out to sea.
Yeah, as a backup. So there's
send it into space.
It has to go somewhere. And so it's not as easy as going, we want it on land, because if the land is sodden. So there's lots of considerations.
Yeah, it sounds very complicated. Yeah,
it is, and that's why it's taken a significant amount of time. And then it comes down to, we had the discussions on the LTP and the on Wednesday, and then the enormous costs, not just for Raglan around the treatment of our three waters, and that's fresh water, wastewater, and our stormwater. They are significant costs, and so the three waters reforms or some form of reform that takes that responsibility and the cost away from the ratepayer really needs to happen, regardless of what government is in. You know, we as local government really need to be advocating and pushing that this responsibility needs to be taken up by central government as well. And a shout out to my fellow councillor Mike Keir, who has a place here in Raglan, but he's one of the councillors for Tamahere. He's been very staunch in, you know, that we really need to push central government to be taking some of these costs, because we can't as local councils cover what's coming, and they're enormous costs. And it's not just for Raglan, it's across the country.
It's across the country. In fact, it's across the Western world, I think. There's been
the eye-watering figures that we are looking at. And then we're looking at the, you know, road maintenance and the infrastructure that we need to put in to future-proof. All of those sorts of things.
Something's happened with the, and this is getting out of council territory, but something's happened with the economic paradigm that we've adopted for the last 40 years, and it's been adopted in lots of countries around the world. and it seems to have left, there's just not enough financial resources. There's enough money in the world, but it's all in one place. It's not, you know, council gets its money from rates from normal people, and our effective spending, the effect of our money seems to have been reduced.
Well, we've got millions and millions of dollars worth of infrastructure as a local council, and the responsibility of just the upkeep, and also, you know, if we're looking aspirationally to having a gold standard, whether it's for our wastewater or whether it's for our roads, it comes at a cost. And in a local context, our ratepayers can't afford that. And then when you look in a bigger context across the country and you have taxpayers, and we have a population of 5.5 million and we're servicing significant infrastructure, you know, something's got to give.
Well, and something will, and things will continue to give. We'll continue to have sewage in the harbour in many places around the country.
Treated
wastewater, and people getting sick in Havelock North. Like, those are the symptoms of the problem we've got. And we all got distracted by the co-governance debate, but behind,
which was just a red herring.
But behind, behind that, there was still this very real physical issue of what to do with the infrastructure.
What to do? Yeah. We know what we need to do with the infrastructure. It's just that who's going to pay for it, as well, and to what level of are we looking at? As I just mentioned, a gold standard, or the or the best that we can get for what we have.
Okay.
You know, and that's you know, with our long-term plan deliberations, that's what, you know, we might want X, but we can only pay for Y.
Yeah.
You know, we want all of these things that, you know, that we know are good for our communities, but we need to get the basics right as well.
Speaking of the long-term plan, and I know this is Dennis's baby a little bit more than yours, but he was keen to get a structure plan for
And
Raglan.
He actually spoke to one of our staff on Tuesday about that, and he highlighted again because the structure planning is a slow process, and he made it quite clear we need one for Raglan.
And it's been, and the issues with the land-based sewage treatment, like, okay, if we have a pipe here, there needs to be roads. We don't know where our roads are going to go, because we, you know, that kind of highlights that that could have been something that wasn't a structure plan. But they've had to go and do a whole bunch of research, extra research, because that wasn't available. So,
and then looking at Waikato 2070, that sort of forward-facing document about where would growth be in the communities and in Raglan. And that structure plan. So Dennis made it quite clear on Tuesday when he was in on the workshops around a structure plan for Raglan.
All right. I think, have you got anything just council-wide stuff? I know you've got to go soon, but any council-wide stuff that's people may be interested in?
Well, we've got our Freedom Camping deliberations on Monday afternoon. So, you know, out of that will come what that looks like in our community. So watch the space. It's just really the LTP. And, of course, just a reminder to the community, we've got our community board meeting on Wednesday coming.
Yes.
So
yes,
everyone's welcome.
That's why I was trying to look at the agenda,
forum,
but I wasn't ready. You got here too soon, Lisa.
Yeah, I actually haven't read it yet. I'll do that over the weekend. And the open forum is from 1:30, so in the town hall supper room. So we really look forward to seeing people there. It's just business as usual. And, of course, get out and vote if you haven't already voted.
Yeah, and voting closes at 3 today in the town hall. It has been closing at 4 most days, but it's going to be 3 today, according to the official.
And it'll be open tomorrow, which will be the last day of voting.
From 9 till 7. And the election predictions are getting closer all of a sudden.
Of course, but you don't know what's going to happen until
it happens. It's like someone's out there pulling strings, making the drama increase as we get closer to the day, because it just makes good drama.
Well, it might be to get people out and vote. So if you're inclined to vote and you haven't done it, get out there and vote, because it really does matter.
All right, Lisa, thanks for coming in.